Thank you all for being here today. So I'm going to talk to you about a web-based model of nitrogen mineralization from cover crops. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I recently started working at ARS in Stoneville, Mississippi, but this is work that I did at the University of Georgia and hope to build on at ARS in the coming years. So a brief outline. I'll cover an introduction, the model of nitrogen mineralization from cover crops, series N is the name of the submodel, surface applied cover crops and water potential, and wrap up with some conclusions. So as we're all aware, cover crops can be important in nitrogen management. They can provide part or all of the nitrogen needed by subsequent cover crops or subsequent cash crops. And they also have other beneficial effects, such as mitigating environmental and economic losses, suppressing weeds, decreasing erosion. So I'm going to jump right into the model. A lot of work has been done modeling nitrogen mineralization from cover crops. The unique thing about what we've done with the Series N model this time is we focused on the pools of decomposition from the cover crop residue, and we divided it into carbohydrates, cellulose, hemicellulose, and lignin, which is easily measurable with NIRS. And we assume that 75% of that decomposition goes into ammonium at the each having its own rate constant of decomposition, which has been determined by previous lab incubations and field studies, but we took a lot of these studies combined and calibrated these rate constants. And then we assumed that 25% goes to soil organic matter. So our objective was to calibrate and validate the Series N computer model to accurately predict the release of plant-available nitrogen from cover crops. So with the calibration, as I mentioned, we took data from 7 different studies with 85 different treatments. And by adjusting those rate constants of decomposition, we were able to get a good fit of the modeled nitrogen mineralized and the measured nitrogen mineralized with a very good correlation. So our next step was to do a field study for validation of the model. And it's a good flow of presentations, actually, because we did an in-situ study with soil cores, so thank you for explaining that very well. So we planted our cover crops and analyzed them using near-infrared spectroscopy to get those different pools of decomposition. We used our PVC soil cores, and took those from the field, brought them into the lab to do the treatments. In our case, we didn't use the resin bags, but we did use a cation anion resin, and we scooped out the bottom 2.5 centimeters of each soil core, mixed in the resin, repacked, ideally at the original bulk density, and to maintain continuity. But, of course, each method has its pros and cons, but that's the way we did it. And then we did crimson clover and rye, but I'm only going to talk about the crimson clover today. So we applied the residue at 3,000 kilograms dry matter per hectare, and we did both surface applied and incorporated. We covered with the cores with the 2-millimeter fiberglass mesh, secured it, and replaced it in the field. This was 1 year of the study where we replaced them in the field. And actually 1 year we did put them in with our corn plots because we had another study with cover crops and corn. So we used data loggers. Those are placed kind of in the... Well, I'll talk about that later. But data loggers were placed within the cores and between the cores. We measured soil water content and temperature. inorganic nitrogen was extracted with KCl and measured colorimetrically. We did 30, 60, 90, and 120 days. And then the mineralization measured was compared to the model prediction. But we also included the treatment of no cover crops. That was our control. Okay, so this is our sampling times of 30, 60, 90, and 120 days. On the left axis, we've got soil temperature, and that's the pink line across the top. Then on the right axis, we've got soil water content with the gray bars. And we're also showing the red horizontal line for lower limit and blue for drained upper limit, which correspond to wilting point and field capacity. Because those are factored into the model as kind of limiting the way the first order kinetics works. So 2012, we had a relatively wet or non-limiting moisture conditions, basically. So looking at our first set of data, we're showing the orange circles are the surface applied crimson clover, nitrogen mineralized from the surface applied crimson clover. So our measured values are the orange circles, and the model prediction is the orange line. And then our green triangles are showing the measured nitrogen mineralized from the incorporated clover, and the green dashed line is the model prediction. So you can see that For the incorporated, we had overlap of the measured values with predicted values, which is what we were hoping for. And with the incorporated, our model was overpredicting for the first three sampling times, but we did catch it at the end there. So those bars are showing our standard deviation. So we looked at it a different way with confidence intervals, just being a little more generous with the predictions there. And we found that in that case, this is the same 2012 data set, we did overlap with the model for the most part, even with the surface applied. And another feature of the model is you have options with input, and since, you know, we had the luxury of data loggers, which most farmers don't, but we used our measured climate data, and it's shown in the solid lines for the predictions. But we also showed the five-year average, because they can use the weather station data, and they could select a wet year, a dry year, or average of the last 5 years. Okay, 2013, drier conditions, and then again, this is showing the measured versus predicted, and in this case, on day 90, we fell outside of our predicted values using measured data at day 90 for crimson clover surface applied, so we just couldn't quite get that covered. For statistical analysis, we looked at root mean square error, lack of fit, with a lower root mean square error and a non-significant lack of fit, indicating a good model prediction. For the most part, 4 out of 4 of our measured values fell within the model predictions, and the crimson clover surface applied for that dry year, we lost. You know, one of our values did not fall within the 95% confidence interval. So overall, we saw 30 to 80 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare mineralized over the 3 years of the study, so a significant contribution of nitrogen for subsequent crops. Our model prediction for Crimson Clover Incorporated did fall within our 95% confidence intervals. The model over-predicted for that one value for Crimson Clover surface applied, and overall, you know, we had less agreement with the surface applied predictions from the model. So, we're more accurate with incorporated than surface applied. And we wanted to look at adjustments that could be made for the surface applied. So I'll talk to you now about a little bit of work we did looking at water potential. So water potential at the cover crop soil interface may actually be a better driver of the model. As I mentioned, it's soil water content that's driving the model now. But when the residue is surface applied, water potential can vary greatly and be a better driver of mineralization. So we wanted to determine if a Campbell Scientific reflectometer could measure water potential at that interface. So this is from those the previous image of the plots, this part we had in the middle. We set up an area where we surface applied the clover, and we had two probes at the interface of the cover crop in the soil. And then we would take samples throughout the season over a range of wet to dry conditions and measured water potential with a potentiometer. So this is over that range of conditions. The x-axis is showing the period of the data given by the reflectometer, and then the y-axis is showing our measured water potential. And we got the following equation and found that was, we were able to measure to water potential using that device. We did a moisture release curve with water, the clover water content on the x-axis and the water potential on the y-axis. And so what we're seeing basically is over a wide range of water potential, we can have a jump of 100 megapascals in over just a slight change in water content of 0.2 grams per gram. So the nuance of water content is not capturing the wide swings in water potential. The climate data that we measured at the same time, so we're showing temperature is the purple line, the temperature below the clover residue, and those wide swinging diurnal fluctuations. And then the green line is showing soil temperature. And then on the bottom, we're showing the residue water potential. And so that's what we would expect, the wide swinging diurnal fluctuations in water potential, like inversely with temperature. And again, one of those wide swings of 100 megapascals within one day. Meanwhile, we've got our soil water content just kind of moving along here, and of course responding to the rainfall events. That right now we're driving our model with this while we're at the surface applied residue. We're actually experiencing these wide swings in water potential. So overall, we found that we can measure water potential using a reflectometer. And our next question is, can we use relative humidity to predict water potential of the surface applied cover crops? Because, again, this is a model. It's available now at the University of Georgia Extension website. And, the potential to use something that data that can be gathered by weather stations and use that as a driver of the model to more accurately predict from surface applied cover crops, that would be a huge asset. So some conclusions. Overall, we were able to calibrate and validate the model, and adjustments still need to be made for the crimson clover surface applied. I'd like to acknowledge the University of Georgia. This is where this work was done. The lab technician, John Rima, was instrumental in the lab work and field work. It's a lot of work installing those soil cores. And then co-authors, most from the University of Georgia. And also the USDA ARS, my current employers and funders of future work on this model. And with that, I would like to thank you. And if there's time, I'll take questions.
Okay. the nitrogen management practices for the next cash crop?
Yes.
How that could be used?
Okay, yeah, so the question is, you know, if a farmer wanted to use this to refine their nitrogen management practices for their subsequent cash crop, how would they do that? So the way it's, you know, the model is user-friendly, and so they could go to that website and kind of, you know, enter in the data that they know, and then anything that, that is not known, they can use estimates, you know, five-year average, and basically they can run the model now, and they could tell them, okay, if it's a dry year, you're going to have, you know, 60 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. They can apply that as a nitrogen credit and reduce their nitrogen application rate by that amount. So, thanks.